Okay, I call this meeting of the Community Regional Affairs to order. It is now 8:01 a.m. Thursday, April 4th, 2024 in Capitol Room 106. Members present are Representative Baker, Representative McKay, Representative Mears, Representative Ruffridge, Representative Hinshute, and myself, Representative McCormick. Please let the record reflect that we have quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, as always, I would like to thank Sophia Tenney, the committee secretary for records, and Zach Lawhorn from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. Today, we will be hearing two bills. First, we will hear CSSB 161 by Senator Bjorkman, and second, we will hear HB 221 by Representative Carrick. For SB 161, we will be having public testimony today. So, with that, Senator Bjorkman and Ms. Ashe, would you please come forward, put yourself on the record, give us a brief recap of your legislation, and if members have questions, we can go ahead and get through some of those. Otherwise, we will move into public testimony. Welcome. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Chair McCormick and honorable members of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is State Senator Jesse Bjorkman, representing the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula, and it is my pleasure to be with you here today. To recap the bill, the heart of this bill is that it extends the property tax deferment, otherwise known as an exemption, from farm use lands to farm use buildings so that those buildings can be taxed at the farm rate and not the full and true value assessment. That doesn't mean that there is zero taxes on those farm buildings. It just means that they're taxed at the farm rate. Also, this bill extends optional provisions for municipalities and political subdivisions to add and make sure that they're allowed to incorporate all farm buildings if they so choose. So that is the nature of this bill as far as the mechanics of how the tax options work. And as well as the bar is simplified for acquiring these tax deferments or tax breaks for farmers. Instead of a farmer having to open their entire financial records to an assessor to qualify for this tax break, they only have to file a Schedule F with the IRS saying that they are in the business of farming and show $1,000 in sales. So filing a Schedule F says that, yes, I am in the farming business, and this is a business that I am in to make money, and I'm showing $1,000 in sales. Also important to remember that these assessments that are placed on farm use lands and farm use buildings are divided based on the area of land and the area of the building that are used for food production and farming production. It's not as if someone can build an airplane hangar or a large garage to store their Lamborghinis and have goats in the corner and write off the whole garage. It doesn't work. You only get the tax break on the portions of the building that are used for farming and food production. Ms. Ashe, did you have anything you'd like to add?
For the record, Laura Ashe, staff to Senator Bjorkman, and no.
Also, it might be worth pointing out that the version before you that hopefully you have now that passed out of the Senate does indeed include aquaculture, and it was regrettable that you all had a version that was an earlier version of the bill that did not pass out of the Senate. We added aquaculture on the floor. So just to clarify, as that was a question last time.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. I believe Representative McKay might have an amendment coming forward for Lamborghinis.
Yeah.
No. Before we move into public testimony, I wanted to afford the committee the opportunity to ask any questions if we had them before proceeding. Okay, hearing none, I guess we'll go ahead and move into public testimony. Thank you very much, Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Now open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Uh, Before we continue, I did want to note for the record, we were joined by Vice Chair McCabe at 8:02 a.m. Please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Carol Treem, and I'm here representing the Alaska Municipal League. Our members have adopted a set of principles that they revisit every year and vote on every year. And those principles include opposing unfunded mandates and opposing the preemption of local control. So I'm here to talk about mandatory exemptions and how they reduce our local government's ability to raise revenue, but at the same time, they do not do anything to reduce its costs. And expanding mandatory exemptions shifts the tax burden to those who remain largely commercial property owners, residential homeowners, and renters. So in addition, expanding the mandatory exemption lowers the full value determination, which in turn lowers the amount of funding a local government can give to a school district, both the minimum and maximum amounts. It changes that. This is different to optional exemptions, which do not impact that school funding formula. And optional exemptions allow municipalities to provide fit-for-purpose policy that fits their local needs. So we support the requirement in this bill that would remove the removal of the requirement for the optional exemption to be put to voters. I think that's a administrative burden that we're happy to see go and allow that exemption to be put in place by ordinance only. And we support the expansion of the optional exemption, which gives local governments more room to maneuver. That's all I have.
Thank you very much for your testimony this morning, Ms. Treem. Are there any questions from members? Hearing none, thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify? Seeing no one here that would like to testify, we will now move to online testimony. We have a Brad St. Pierre from Fairbanks. If you could state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes. Please begin your testimony.
Hello, and thank you, Chair, committee members, for the opportunity to address the committee. My name is Brad St. Pierre. My wife and I, Christine, own Goosefoot Farm, a diversified vegetable farm in Fairbanks. I'm speaking to you today as that young and beginning farmer that has been referred to in other testimony throughout this bill's path to this committee. I support the tax exemption for farm buildings and farmland for farmers. I'm one of the farmers involved in bringing the Proposition 2 to the ballot in Fairbanks last October. That proposition passed by a vote of the public, and the October election had 20% participation rate, and the proposition passed with 72% of the North Star Borough in support. In the drafting of that proposition, the current state statute that already provides communities the power to give farmers tax exemption on their farm buildings was used to draft that proposition language. There are two pieces of SB 161 that I believe should be amended or, if unchanged, should not be passed to this committee. This bill, unamended, will negatively affect young farmers and their access to farmland. First, the decision on farm tax exemption should be put or kept in the hands of community members. By requiring the farm tax exemption to be decided by a vote of the people, it removes the partisan politics that can impact decisions made by members of assemblies and councils. Also, what we saw in Fairbanks is that 72% of our community engages agricultural policy, and though thought about where they stand in support of farmers, more engagement of the public in agriculture and agricultural issues will increase the success of local farms through building public awareness and connection to where their food is produced and who produces it. Please amend the bill to keep the public engaged and keep the vote of the people required on all tax exemption changes held in this bill. Second, the state should keep the qualification for applicants to be proof that 10% of the farmer's total income comes from farming, changing it to the ability to produce $1,000 of agricultural products and filing a Schedule F does not support the type of farming that will bolster our food system. Producing 10% of total income from farming is a low bar. In our very first year of production, we sold over that percentage of total income from farming. Of the farmers at your farmer's market, your local groceries, big corporate stores, none of them produce anywhere close to that little of an amount of product value. Furthermore, the $1,000 USDA monetary value determining what a farm is has not been adjusted for inflation since 1974. I support Alaskans growing their own food. It's one of the most Alaskan things we do. Yet if we are working in earnest towards food security for our community, the state needs to differentiate between hobby farms and production farmers. Farmers who sell the food they grow to the public to support their families deserve the state support through tax breaks. Hobby farms do not need a tax break. It is a hobby. The greatest challenge across the country, including Alaska, for new and beginning farmers is access to land. Many young and beginning farmers lease the land they farm. The tax exemption, keeping the proof 10% income for farmers, gives field owners and retiring farmers the impetus to...
So, St. Pierre, it's been 3 minutes. If you could please wrap up your testimony.
Yes. That 10%, it gives impetus to field owners to lease their ground to farmers who do produce over 10% of their income from farming. And by removing the 10%, it reduces the value of new and beginning farmers to farm landowners. We do need to save farmland, but we need to ensure that it's being farmed into the future. So thank you for the opportunity and testimony to the community, the committee.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Mr. St. Pierre. Next, we have Savannah Fletcher from Fairbanks. If you could state your name for the record. Begin your testimony. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning to the committee. My name is Savannah Fletcher. I'm the presiding officer of the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. As you heard Mr. St. Pierre say, our community did pass by an overwhelming majority Proposition 2 last year, which would be a tax exemption for farm structures used exclusively for farming. And we heard an intention from this committee on Tuesday, or a suggestion from legal, that this bill would not nullify, it would not do away with what we just passed last year as a tax exemption. And while we appreciate that intention, I want to flag we have concerns with the language in Section 1. The way it's currently framed right now, we do not interpret that to allow our exemption to continue. We would ask that if that is truly the intention of this body, and we can provide language that would support this amendment if that's a request from this body, but that it be changed so it's clear that this is not something that must be precisely complied with, but is, you know, a floor. Right now, because we allow a tax exemption only for farm structures, and the basis to qualify means you have to have 10% of your income, currently what's in statute, changing it to this would mean that what we have is no longer permissible. So I just want to flag that for this body. We would need to see some change in the language of Section 1 that would give us that local power, local choice, and to really effectuate the voters approved overwhelmingly last year so that we could set a different standard on what would receive that full tax exemption and limit it to farm structures under a different financial qualifier. Because otherwise, what this does is really open up a much broader exemption than what the voters approved last year and than what our borough intended. And so I just want to speak to some of those specifics briefly. That $1,000 threshold for the mandatory valuation of farmland and farm structures is a huge departure from our current standard of 10% of income. As Mr. St. Pierre flagged, this may not encourage additional farming, but just support hobby farmers getting big tax exemptions, but not producing more food for our community to consume. And this then does shift the property tax burden even more onto families and those who do not own these large swaths of land, but to folks just trying to get by paying on their primary residence or on businesses, for example. So that is a concern we have with the current language. Additionally, just from our assessing department, the language says you make $1,000 of agricultural products or normally sell at least $1,000. And that normally is concerning. The way the USDA has interpreted it, and that's where this language is coming from, is that you did not have to actually sell $1,000 that year, but you have the ability to do so. And we've seen struggles in assessing with disputes amongst nonprofits, for example, and how we interpret the language of exclusive. I can only imagine how our assessing will struggle with interpreting a language such as normally, and having something that broad again. It may give people tax exemptions when they're not actually producing food at that time for the community, and instead shifts that tax burden onto those who otherwise were not getting the benefit of additional food security from that. And I just wanted to flag also those challenges we...
Ms. Fletcher, it's been 3 minutes. If you could please wrap up your testimony.
Thank you. Okay, the last challenge is just structures and that they no longer have to be exclusively used for farming. Assessing is not allowed to, you know, trespass onto a property and determine what square footage in the kitchen is used for washing vegetables that you plan to sell versus used for cooking food for your family. I think that makes it a squishier and tougher analysis that I foresee conflicts at the local level with. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We do have a question from Representative Himshue. Representative Himshue, please go right ahead.
Thank you, Chair McCormick. Ms. Fletcher, the recommendation to switch from 10% of yearly gross income to $1,000 in sales comes directly from the Alaska Food Strategy Task Force report, which is a 2023 report. Can you elaborate on, and maybe you were speaking more from the municipality side of things than from the farming, but you did bring it up. So tell me more about what you're thinking about the difference between the 10% of yearly gross income versus the $1,000 in sales.
Yes, happy to speak to that. And just this is based on comments we heard as a body last year when adopting what we did pass as Prop 2 at the 10% level. Even at the 10% level, some farmers expressed concern that people could, quote unquote, you know, cheat or take advantage of the system, and they aren't folks truly farming as their primary job, seeking to sell food. And that is presumably a more stringent standard because most folks are making more than $10,000 in income. And dropping it down to $1,000, I think having a flat basis that doesn't require showing your entire financial records to someone is easier. At the borough, we've had some rub when people don't want to have to prove that financial percentage. But you can make it a flat number that isn't so low as $1,000 because, as we've heard testimony already today and what we heard at the borough level last year, that could be someone selling salsa from the tomatoes they grow in their greenhouse. It's not necessarily someone selling a large-scale production for the community. And I'm happy to dive more into it, but I hope that addresses your question.
Follow-up, Representative Himshue.
Thank you, Chair McCormick, through the chair. Ms. Fletcher, thank you. That does help a whole lot. there were a couple reasons you gave for needing to change that $1,000 to a higher threshold, if not sticking with the 10%. So if we were to go to a higher threshold, that would still require sharing a person's financial statements. Is that the barrier, or is it the money amount?
So whether it's $1,000 or a higher threshold, what this bill envisions is sharing not your whole financials, but just that one Schedule F form. And so either way, something will have to be shared. But I think the streamlining from this is that you don't need to show your entire income from any other pursuits you have, but it's focused solely on your farming activity. But you can achieve that with a higher level than the $1,000. So I think we have concerns that it's too low to achieve the policy goal, but we're not saying you must stick to a percentage of income.
Follow-up, Representative Himshue.
Thank you, Chair McCormick. I guess my final follow-up is, do you have your own recommendation of what that threshold should be, if not $1,000? Is it $5,000?
I hesitate because our body hasn't specified a specific number, but I think we do have, you know, farmers on the line, and, you know, the Alaska Farmers Market Association might be a good entity to reach out to for more specific guidance. But I do think off the cuff that $5,000 is closer to the target when you think of what 10% would have been of someone's salary.
Thank you. And I guess my comment is we're wanting to support people to get into the industry. And so there's, you know, kind of conflicting things that we're trying to do here because I understand what you're talking about. So I'll listen to more testimony. Thank you.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thank you, Ms. Fletcher. I'm curious, since you did have a public vote on this and you have shifted in Fairbanks, what is the change in revenue to Fairbanks been prior to the public vote on the tax break for them? What does it cost
you? It's a good question. Thank you, Representative McCabe, and through the chair. We have only just implemented this last fall, so I do not have great numbers to show you yet, since really we're just getting into this upcoming fiscal year. But what we've anticipated, if you just look at, so we don't have exact data on structures, I guess I'll say, but if you look at the land, for example, this could potentially, as like a very conservative estimate, take at least $7 million off of our tax rolls as written currently, because it does, and that's going off of what is qualified as agricultural land at the 10% threshold, so not even at this lower $1,000 threshold. I think it could be much larger. But the narrower bill that we passed for just exclusive farm use structures, I'm sorry, I don't have numbers yet since it really only just passed half a year ago.
Follow up, Vice Chair McCabe.
Thank you. So, I mean, there must have been some studies done before you presented it to the public and how much money it would cost the borough and, you know, having some sort of a reason for them to vote on it or not vote on it. So if you happen to, if you could get that data to us, that'd be really great so we could kind of see how your experiment up there, if you will, worked. Also, you know, I'm a little concerned that we've used hobby farms sort of derisively in the last two testimonies. And, you know, hobby farms are there for people to feed themselves. So while it doesn't contribute to all of Alaska, it does take those folks that have a hobby farm off of the food rolls, if you will, and allow others to use that food that's produced. So I'm not so sure hobby farms is necessarily a bad thing if somebody's you know, growing their own food. It's more of a comment than anything. Thank you.
Are there any further questions for Ms. Fletcher before proceeding to the next testifier? Ms. Fletcher, thank you for participating on our lightning round this morning. Next, we have Bonnie Wolstad from Fairbanks. If you could state your name for the record, begin your testimony of 3 minutes.
Sorry about that. Bonnie Wolstad, North Pole, Alaska. Through the chair, thank you for this opportunity to testify on SB 161, the tax exemption for farm use. I appreciate this bill and the sponsors working to alleviate a number of concerns and issues with the current statute. I would ask that consideration be given to adding words in Section B of the current statute, adding the words on or before the wording before May 15th. This would be in line with the proposed change for Section F, changing the language to read on or before April 15th. The use of the Schedule F form 1040 for documentation for farming operations is a positive improvement. It acknowledges that it is nearly impossible to decide on a small farm's income, and that many farmers within our state require an alternative income stream as well as the health benefit that may be obtained through outside income. If you have a number of siblings who own a farm, then you would have their combined income to have to consider for the current 10% income requirement, which could eliminate eligibility. I found it to be ironic that last year the state of Alaska was offering grants to assist with the purchase of feed for livestock to help sustain small farms, at the same time that individuals were finding it increasingly difficult to apply for and receive the farm tax exemption. SBS 161 will definitely assist in helping to keep small farms operational in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Are there any questions for the testifier? Hearing none, I want to just quickly check to see if we have any more testifiers who have joined us this morning. No. Okay. All right. With that, I will now close public testimony for SB 161. Go ahead and take a brief at ease. All right, we are now back on the record. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Or any comments following the testimony that we just heard? Representative Hipshute.
Thank you. I'd like to, through the chair, ask the bill sponsor to respond to the idea of the 10,000 versus the, sorry, the 10% versus 1,000, or any other comments about what we just heard.
Once again, for the record, Senator Jesse Bjorkman. Through the chair, Representative Hipshute, you were correct in identifying that the source of that standard to access, again, this tax deferment, which is not a complete exemption, it's a deferment down to the farm use rate, came from the Food Strategy Task Force, and that number was chosen off of the federal definition of a farm. And I would like to align myself with Representative McCabe's comments surrounding hobby farmers in that farms often start small and then they grow bigger as they scale and they're able to produce more food. The impetus for that language, as well as other parts of this bill, are a result of working with farmers and municipalities around the state to make sure that this bill would work for them. And I think that that $1,000 threshold is a good mark to start, because folks filing a Schedule F are telling the IRS that they are in the business of farming. It may be a side hustle. It may be something that they don't rely on, but they are in the business of farming. And I think that's important to recognize and offer them a tax deferment, a break. That's not zero. They still pay some property taxes, but they're paying the farm use rate. And that farm use rate is derived from what would their land, what would their ground and buildings be worth if all of the other property around them were farms and not strip malls or mini storage or housing or other uses that would be assessed at a higher level. That's the purpose of the farm use rate. And also that's the purpose of having a $1,000 threshold, so that people can begin farming and they can stay farming. Did you have other comments, Ms. Ashe?
Laura Ashe for the record, staff to Senator Bjorken. No, sir, I think you summed it up eloquently.
Follow up, Representative Himshut.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Bjorken, I've never filed a Schedule F. Is that something that only farmers file?
Through the chair, Representative Himshut, yes, that's our understanding. Okay. From the folks that we've talked to, some of whom have been farmers, and I talked to an accountant, and that is the understanding that only someone who's in the business of an agricultural operation would file a Schedule F. I did check, and I confirmed that aquaculture operations can file a Schedule F. A marijuana grow can file a Schedule F. If they are in the business of an agricultural producing agricultural products, or and also because in the Schedule F instructions, it refers to fish farms and aquaculture.
Follow-up, Representative Himshut.
So in a way, that could help municipalities to discern by requiring the federal Schedule F. That's how a municipality can discern between someone who is making an income from farming, whether they're just launching into a new business, hobby farmer, not our business. We just need to know you've scheduled a federal Schedule F. You filed a Schedule F. Therefore, at least some portion of your income is from farming specifically.
That's correct.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may add to that, I think, again, to just underline the point that Representative McCabe made and that Senator Bjorken made, that this term hobby farm, if a small production farmer is selling at least $1,000 of food, they are putting $1,000 of additional food into our system that isn't present. And yesterday we heard, on Tuesday, we heard testimony from a farmer who said that there are virtually no farmers or very few farmers for whom farming is their only job. I think it really does, if we're looking at increasing the food supply in Alaska, focusing solely on the large scale operations isn't practicable. Making room for the smaller operations that are creating a positive change is very important.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Hearing none, I think we're going to set this bill aside. I'm going to go ahead and set an amendment deadline for Wednesday, April 10th, 3 p.m. Please be sure to get your amendments to me as quickly as you can. I also know that we have a CS that we disperse, so if members could please look that over, that would be good as well. But we're going to set this bill aside for now unless there's any further discussion. Hearing none. All right, Senator Bjorkman, thank you very much, Mr. Shea. I also want to note you had the best pin I've ever seen before last time. Now you have a lobster pin that's even better. So
represent. It's actually a crawfish.
It's a crawfish.
A farmed aquatic animal, not in Alaska, but representing aquaculture.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for wearing that. And again, thank you, Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Have a great day.
We'll take a brief at ease while Representative Carrick and staff join us at the table. Brief at ease. All right, we are now back on the record. We are joined by Representative Carrick and staff, Mr. Stuart Relay. Please go right ahead and begin your presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee, and thank you for having us this morning. This is Ashley Carrick, representative for House District 35 in West Fairbanks, and here today to do an introduction of House Bill 221 for everybody. I would like to just go over a brief introductory statement and then allow my staff to walk through this sectional and introduce our invited testifier. Alaska has abundant land resources, and land ownership is a goal for most Alaskans. Unfortunately, there's a large number of parcels in boroughs around Alaska, particularly in our second-class boroughs, Fairbanks included, that were created outside the subdivision process, such as by recording a deed and resulting in a large number of lots that cannot legally be further subdivided. In our Fairbanks North Star borough, as an example, it's estimated that there are as many as 10,000 land parcels that were created outside of the subdivision process, and that many of those illegal subdivisions were not created by the current property owners. Currently, improperly subdivided land, for illegally subdivided land to be further subdivided, the owner of that land has to research the entire history of the creation of their parcel and notify all other landowners in that parcel of the further subdivision. This presents an incredibly burdensome and bureaucratic process for landowners. So broadly speaking, House Bill 221 helps reduce a current barrier to land ownership by stating that boroughs may create an exemption process for illegally subdivided lands to be further subdivided without the current burdensome legal process. This is really important for homeowners as well as businesses to be able to more easily sell land and create further subdivisions. In the 1970s and 80s, many land parcels were sold off and many were illegally subdivided by the owners. And since those parcels were illegally subdivided, they cannot legally be further subdivided without going through that process. Again, that process in Fairbanks, as an example, includes getting written permission from all landowners within the parcel. Many of these individuals will have moved, some have passed away, so it can be an incredibly difficult and sometimes impossible process. Alaskans should have the freedom to sell off parcels of their land without that process, and this bill would allow boroughs to make a new system allowing that to be possible. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my staff to do the sectional, and we do have an invited testifier as well.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Stuart Relay, staff representative Carrick. So the sectional is as follows. Section 1, AS 2935210, Bravo, adds a new subsection allowing second-class boroughs to create an exemption process. That way landowners can further subdivide their incorrectly subdivided land. Section 2, AS 2940180 alpha, adds a new subsection allowing adds a new subsection allowing landowners to sell those lands pursuant to Section 1. Section 3 allows lands within a municipality to have the same process, and Section 4 provides for an immediate effective date. Mr. Chairman, that is a sectional analysis, and I just want to say really quickly that this bill is a work in progress, and we welcome feedback from the committee, and we're working with our the boroughs as well to make sure it accomplishes all the goals that we are hoping to achieve.
And Mr. Chairman, online we have Kellen Spillman, who is from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. He's the Director of Community Planning. I believe he has some prepared remarks.
Thank you, Representative Carrick and Mr. Relay. Are there any questions before we move into invited testimony? Hearing none, Director Spillman, if you are on the line, please go right ahead, state your name for the record, and go ahead and begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you. My name is Kellen Spillman. I'm the planning director at Fairbanks North Star Borough, last name spelled S-P-I-L-L-M-A-N. And also joining me today is the, for questions, is the borough attorney, Jill Dolan. So good morning, Chair and members of the committee. I thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony. And I thank Representative Carrick and her staff for the initial presentation. The planning department at the Fairbanks North Star Borough is responsible for administering the subdivision regulations for the entire borough, the Fairbanks North Star Borough. That includes both cities. The issue Representative Carrick described as deed splits or unauthorized division of land, historically also known as illegal subdivisions, has historically been very prevalent in the Fairbanks area. Unfortunately, most of these illegal subdivisions or subdivisions by deed occurred in the 1970s and early 1980s when many folks in the Fairbanks area didn't follow the subdivision regulations. I can't say if they didn't know about the regulations or chose not to follow those regulations, but rather than coming to the borough and applying for a subdivision where things like legal access, road access, and very importantly, surveys and property monuments could be insured, folks simply deeded portions of their property to other individuals. This has been against code and state statute for quite a long time, as long as the borough existed. Most of this activity did occur in the pipeline era when it was very difficult for the borough to enforce these subdivision regulations. So simply put, there were a lot of folks that got away with dividing their property during this time. This practice essentially ended in the mid-1980s. When the borough became much more aggressive with enforcing the regulations. But the problem still exists of all of these quote-unquote deed splits that had already occurred prior to that time period. So to put this in the Fairbanks scale of context, Representative Carrick mentioned we have approximately 10,000 parcels. That's about a one-fifth of all the parcels in the borough that were potentially created by these deed splits. So over the past 40 to 50 years, as you can imagine, these parcels have been bought and sold, and now we're seeing significant problems arising from someone who unknowingly purchases one of these parcels and either wishes to subdivide it or even shift a lot line with one of their neighbors. To give you a specific example, we have a quarter section of land in the North Pole area that's been split 99 separate times. So now there are 99 separate owners. Some of these splits were legal, and some of them were illegal. But now if one of those owners wishes to further subdivide or even shift a lot line, potentially they may have to get all 99 other owners to sign on to that subdivision application. That can be, as you can imagine, very difficult or even not possible in some cases. So this problem, it does exist statewide. I've been in contact with quite a few other communities, in communities such as Ketchikan, Matsu, Anchorage, Juneau, and definitely areas of the unorganized borough. But the scale of all those communities really pales in comparison to what we're seeing in Fairbanks. So the end goal would be to clearly have the authority in state statute to create a local process for addressing these deed splits. Each community and planning authority could develop their process that really works for them. So we feel a process like this give an option to owners who unknowingly purchased one of these parcels and wishes to either subdivide or, again, simply shift one of these lot lines. And just locally, we have seen development projects be halted when it becomes clear to the owner or financial institutions that the original parcel was illegally created. So that does conclude my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions the commission may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Spillman. Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. I appreciate you joining us here this morning, and I might have a couple of questions. We'll see what clarifies along the way. So, through the chair, I'd like to get some clarification on what the barriers are here. Are the barriers just in further subdivisions and changing of lot lines, or are there issues with folks being able to legally transfer land and get loans, for example?
Through the chair, I appreciate the question. The biggest barrier that we're seeing in our office is further subdivision and changing of lot lines, or even honestly knowing where some of these lot lines are because they haven't been surveyed or monumented sometimes.
Follow up, Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. So are these parcels like legally recorded with the recorder's office?
These parcels are recorded in the recorder's office, usually by a meets and map bounds description. So they have been recorded. My belief is they weren't. They record because they did not go through that subdivision process.
That's it for now.
Representative Himshut, did I see you had a question? Are there any further questions for Director Spillman? Seeing none. Representative Carrick, was there any other invited testimony? I see Jake Maxwell on here, but it says he's on for questions. They're not on for testimony, are they? Okay, no. That's all right. So if there are no further questions for the director, I guess I would open up if there's any questions for the bill sponsor. Seeing none, I will allow for closing comments from the bill sponsor, Representative Carrick.
Just a thank you to the chair and the members of the committee for hearing this legislation. Like I mentioned at the beginning, this is a work in progress, this legislation. We want to make sure it truly accomplishes the goal that would benefit the Fairbanks North Star Borough and some of the other boroughs that Mr. Spillman listed who have this issue. And we would look forward to working with the committee to make sure that we are accomplishing that with House Bill 221.
Thank you very much, Representative Carrick. Thank you for your testimony this morning. And Mr. Ely, thank you for being here as well. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee will meet again on Tuesday, April 9th at 8 a.m. In our old spot in Barnes Room 124. Information and schedule will be forthcoming this afternoon. The time is 8:46 a.m. and this hearing of the Community Regional Affairs Committee is now adjourned.